Welcome back to the Sunday Session podcast with Chris Kennedy, Craig Wing and Kenny Scott in the studio to dissect a huge round five in the NRL. Boys, we've just seen a pretty one-sided performance from the Raiders and the Eels, so we'll start, as always, going backwards through the round. Kenny, you're in the office with me for this one. The Eels didn't give themselves too much of a chance.
No, I loved it. It was about time. Sorry, and that, I didn't mean that because I'm anti-Eels at all.
Take
I
just that, thought, para fans.
Sorry, no, that's not what I meant. Official retraction. I just loved it. It's about time the Raiders had a game where they dominated the whole thing for the whole time. I love the Raiders this year. I'd really like to see Canberra have success. It's been a while for them. And I think this was a great game. Like all the way, like even the pre-game, like the Viking clap at the beginning, that was like that set the platform for the whole game. It was really. I think they had a pretty healthy crowd as well.
This is going to come as a shock to you, but that's been going on for a little while.
No, I know. I've seen the Viking clap before, but with that, like, you know, it's like 6 o'clock on a Sunday night. It's probably pretty cold in Canberra.
You're right.
Really good crowd, and they were all into it. I think what it says is when Canberra's a strong Canberra, I guess it's like everyone loves a winner, right? But Canberra gets a really healthy fan base engaged when they're doing really, really well. And I think that game was just the icing on the cake. Well done, Canberra.
What about for the Eels? They, you know, like we talked about off air, a huge glut of possession against them early on. Didn't really give themselves too much of a chance. Completed it, I think, just over 50% for the whole game. Made hundreds of extra tackles.
You're never going to win a game like that, especially against a big team like the Raiders that are just they're getting a lot more control about their game these days. And as we were saying before, they're playing the entire 80 minutes. So you play against anyone, you only complete at 50%, you're going to struggle and do way more work than you need to.
And they, you mentioned their forward pack. They are big, but they're probably not as big as last year. Junior Paulo playing for the Eels tonight was one of the guys that left, and also Shannon Boyd is at the Titans, but they've replaced them with guys like John Bateman and Ryan Sutton, who we've talked about John Bateman a fair bit in this podcast.
I think
already.
We're starting the unofficial Bateman fan club. We're all in on Bateman.
Fair bit of that going on, but they just look really like Sia Soliola's relishing that sort of move into the prop role, as is Josh Papalia. They just all look really physical, mobile, you know, just belligerent and strong and...
Ooh, belligerent. I like that. Positive use of belligerent.
I just like the way that they finished last season really, really strong. I mean, they gave those top teams a real good run for their money. Mm. And when the season closed, I thought, you know, they wouldn't have looked out of place in the finals. So it's good to see them carrying that on through the off season into the start of this season. I didn't pick them to be doing as well as they are this time of year. But, they're definitely on the way up.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you're trying to find any positives for Parramatta out of that one, I mean, A, you can probably put a line through it saying they're not going to complete it 50% too often, but B, to go into the Sheds 8-0 down at halftime, having hardly touched the ball, they soaked up a mountain of just attacking sort of Canberra offence on their line and showed some real sort of top eight style goal line defence for that first half. And, you know, 19-0 doesn't look too great in the end, but it's a sort of, I guess, confidence-building defensive workout you can get a bit of momentum from. Before we move on, we'll just go through the Dally M votes for this one. Alan Tung was the judge. He's given the 3 to Josh Hodgson. Really complain with that. He's the maestro in that side. 2 went to Chance Nicol-Klokstad, who was really good at the back. I think he finished top the metres for the game, about 170.
What a revelation he's been this year for them, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. And so good under the high ball as well. He diffused plenty of attacking kicks that came his way. Last point went to Jarrod Croke, who had a really strong game as well, plenty of metres. Mm. The only name I think missing there is Josh Papali, who was one of the best on the ground as well, scored first try and plenty of metres in the middle. You can't give points to everyone. Let's move on to the earlier game, Dragons up against the Bulldogs. And I know quite a few people tipped Bulldogs. I went for Dragons, but I didn't think it'd be this one-sided.
Yeah, for the poor Bulldogs fans, right? Like, have that great performance last week against Melbourne where you just miss out with a pretty dodgy kick to draw the game level, to then serve up this, like, I don't know, where do you go? I guess that's the life of a rugby league fan. It giveth and it taketh away. Unfortunately, it's taketh and away, to coin a phrase, 2 weeks in a row for the Bulldogs.
Yeah, I'd rather focus on the Dragons. I was really happy to see the Dragons forwards. They really dominated. They rolled through the middle there. And they actually put the halves on the front foot. I mean, and Ben Hunt, I've ratted on him a few times last year, but I was really happy to see him have a good game. He was instrumental in a number of their tries.
He seemed like he was legitimately enjoying himself.
He looked enthusiastic. He looked like he was having fun, which is, you know, that's if, when your forward pack's doing the right thing and getting you on the front foot, and their forward pack really did rip in. I thought, yeah, it just makes it a whole lot easier for them. Even as far back as a few weeks ago, I think the Dragons halves have been really trying hard to put something on. But today it just seemed to stick. They seemed to be running a lot more fluidly throughout the game.
Mm. People are talking about the lack of disruption now that Gareth Widdop's out injured and they're sort of sticking with the same spine through the match. But you kind of wonder what they would have been doing with that five-man spine if the forwards had been laying that sort of a platform in the first couple of rounds as well.
Yeah, I know. It does certainly make it a lot easier for the rest of the team. And it just gives them more time together to build combinations and go through things that do work and go through things that don't work and then figure it out on the run as well. So, I think the foundation there was definitely laid by the forwards, though. They were outstanding.
Mm. I had two points I wanted to talk about in this game. Them. One, yet another one-on-one strip. It didn't specifically lead to a try, but again, that's got to be like six for the season already. Like, you're the stats man. What's the numbers like? Where are we at?
Well, question without notice. I haven't crunched the numbers on the one-on-one.
I Googled it before I got into the studio, and I couldn't find anything. So I'm assuming you can delve into your magical filing cabinet.
Well, if you tell me in the planning session rather than halfway through the podcast.
Yeah, well, yeah, it'd be nice if we had a planning session, I would definitely bring it up.
Wouldn't it be something you'd start training, though? It's such an easy thing to do, and it's so effective, and especially for little guys that get stuck one-on-one all the time.
Mm.
You're usually up trying to get around the football so guys can't get offloads. But if you can get your hands on it, that's something else.
And my second point was the Corey Norman pirouette, like right at the end. That was beautiful. It was almost like watching the ballet.
It's a big few weeks there, Corey Norman. It's three on the bounce now for the Dragons. I sort of feel like the narrative is still about they're struggling, but that's three consecutive wins. And the last two were by 1 point. That one was by a fair bit more than 1 point, but they're going all right. Go through the Dalian points on that one. Dean Halitau, the judge out at Cogra. 3 points went to Ben Hunt, absolute no-brainer there. 2 went to Paul Vaughan, which I think is the correct decision as well. He's had a massive fortnight, Paul Vaughan. And the last one went to Tim Laffite, who was probably one of the best outside backs on the field. So fair enough there. Takes us through to Saturday night, the Roosters against the Sharks. Maybe a little bit scrappy to start, then the Roosters absolutely blew away and then probably went to sleep a little bit at the end, wingy.
Yeah, it was... It was an interesting game, that one. I, as you said, I thought the Roosters were really, really scrappy in their attack. There was a couple of times there where, look, there was the Sharks just made an error and then the Roosters just made them pay straight away, like the tackle after. And that's, in effect, it was probably a 12-point turnaround on a couple of occasions. And that just goes to show that the class that the Roosters have in their team. They were, for my mind, I thought for a lot of periods they were well below their best, and then they were at their best. So it was a bit of a disjointed performance from them. The Sharks, they worked their way into the game a number of occasions. Like, looking at their stats, they completed really well.
Mm.
On the if you're looking at the stat sheets, it should have been a really, really a close game.
Yeah,
but there's a couple of individuals in the Roosters team, when they decide to get their heads on them, they can really turn a game right around straight away. So we saw some pretty unbelievable tries in that game too.
Yeah. Well, that chip from Keary out to Latrell, it was 10 seconds to go in the half. The Sharks had the ball, decided to go for the all or nothing play with nothing on, and then Roosters did the same.
Kind of stuff, like that was just, just from a pure uninvested fan, like, just amazing to watch. I love when that sort of stuff goes on.
That's just heads in the game for the whole game right until the final whistle. I mean, Keary gets a lot of rap for that, for putting the ball on a dime, but that would have been Latrell Mitchell looking up out on the side, being ready for it, calling it, and them just having confidence in each other. And, you know, they took a long time last year to find their form in attack, the Roosters. It came good right at the back end of the season during the finals, and I always thought that, okay, they knew what their game plan was going to be. They knew their style, how they were going to attack the whole off-season, and this year is all about building the combinations, the little trick plays, all the kind of plays that you used to see Billy Slater and Cameron Smith and Cooper Cronk do, were just just instinctively, and I think that'll really start to come to the floor for the Roosters this year.
Yeah, the way they look now, and it's far too early to call it, right? But they look like they're probably going to be premiers. You know, if you stop the competition right now, they're, in my opinion, they're head and shoulders above the rest, even above Melbourne, who haven't lost yet, which is boring, right? No one wants to have the same premiers 2 years in a row. But if they win playing football like some of the stuff that we saw on Saturday night, it's not that bad.
Mm. It's been good to watch. The Sharks, I guess they've had a fair few injuries, some key players out, obviously missing Matt Moylan. They lost Andrew Fifita to a hamstring strain the second half of that one. Haven't stopped trying, but
they fought hard at stages through that game, and then they just shot themselves in the foot. There was that first one over the other side where Fecky, he dropped the ball. I don't know. I'm getting mixed up with all my games, but I just remember. There was two occasions where the scoreboard could have been completely different, but the Roosters just. They just capitalised on it.
Cherry had a couple of tough moments as well when he was fed the ball on a clean break and just lost his package, which is unfortunate. Yeah. That sort of stuff happens.
Would he have beaten Tedesco to the try line there?
I think so.
Would have been great to see the chase regardless, right?
Yeah. But I don't know if Tedesco's that much of a top flight speedster. His acceleration's phenomenal, but if you had to go 100 metres, I reckon Cherry's got him. Pretty
strides just gets too short.
Well, you mentioned Sherry. He had, I think, there were two Britton Nakora line breaks with Sherry backing up, and he copped a pretty sharp pass on both occasions that he couldn't quite handle. But finished up with, I think, three or four errors, but most of them weren't really his fault. And I was actually quite impressed by the way he lined up Latrell Mitchell a few times. There's clearly no fear at all. You've got a big hulking test and an Origin centre up against an 18-year-old second gamer, and you think he might cop a bit of a bath. But he really aimed up and sort of went toe-to-toe with Latrell, which I thought was a good sign for him in the future. Brett Finch was the Dally M judge. 3 points went to Luke Keary, who just, for me, is the form player of the competition the moment. Right. Two went to James Tedesco, who was pretty incapable of having a bad game at the moment. Last one went to Latrell Mitchell. All three of those guys are fantastic. There's plenty of other guys like Siwa Taukeaha come to mind who also could have put their hands up, but again, you can only give three awards out. Manly were pretty good just before that. What do we make of this one, boys?
I would say, again, I always find that I'm looking at games from the perspective of the losing fan. I don't know why. Maybe I'm just conditioned that way. But again, if I was a Knights fan, I'd be really, really disappointed because the first 20 minutes, they basically weren't there. They gave the game to Manly, and then they played that real tough, gritty Newcastle way for the rest of the game. But it all counts for nothing when you give up an 18-point lead like that.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. That's... For me, I was looking at the Knights, and they just seemed, particularly early on, they just seemed to be running one out quite a lot, which is really easy to defend against. It doesn't really put the opposition under much stress. But Manly looked really good early on. They were finding holes through the Newcastle defence. I think their forwards laid the platform there again. Fanua Blake, I was just about to say, he's a... Didn't really like to see what he was doing when he got sent off the field that time. It's left a bit of a sour taste in my mouth, but I was really rapping him for his performance on the field.
You can be both, I guess. You can be winning the game for your team and also sort of irking up the opposition. But him and Tapau had a huge platform through the middle. What do we think of this? You sort of touched on already, but Newcastle, it's the second game back with Callum Ponga at fullback. Mason Lenoir hasn't quite... he's had very little footy before coming back into first grade in his defence, but, Pierce has been off his game as well. How much of this is sort of the structure and the forwards?
I think the forwards, in all honesty, are missing a creative hooker. They can get out of dummy half, take advantage of any quick play the ball they get, or get them on the front foot, or someone that's a bit constructive that will get out, take their forwards to the line and create a bit of deception so that their forwards can get a one-on-one tackle or through a half a break or something like that to give them some momentum at the moment. And then the other thing is that they're probably missing a half to really back up Mitchell Pearce. It's too easy to just, the back end of the sets, just target him, put him under a world of pressure, and they don't finish the set as well as they possibly could. As I was saying before, I'd really love to see him with one of those Broncos halves partying in them. I think that could really work.
I know we've kicked around, we've chatted about it before. Is Connor Watson injured at the moment?
Yeah, I think he's due back pretty much.
Would he be their first choice six?
I'd be tempted to put him in at six. I don't I don't really like him at one. I think he's probably, if anything, I'd almost start him at hooker in that team. Like when he was just saying they're missing a creative hooker, yeah. He's very sharp.
For my mind, when he went to the Knights, I felt like he was almost about to get it right at hooker, but he just overplayed his hand too much.
Mm.
He gets a little bit ahead of himself, just drops the ball at inopportune times or makes silly mistakes in opportune times, just from basically trying too hard and not focusing on the task at hand at that point in time. But he's fit, he's fast, he's electric out of dummy half. I think there's a lot of halves that actually could work on their passing out of dummy half. He's one of them. But simple things that you could really easily fix.
Mm. Or it could even just be that dynamic number 14 that comes on for Levi with 10 minutes to go until half time and sort of add some spark through the middle. What do we make of Manly? Because I thought once Tommy Turbo went down for 8 weeks, I thought that's sort of the end of their finals hopes. But they were a lot of their players had their best game. I thought Kane Elgee had his best game of the year. Brendan Elliott, who was, you know, struggled a bit early on when Tommy was out, certainly had his best game of the year. They quite a few, we've talked about the forwards, but a few other guys who
Cherry Evans is really
just
taking control there, which is what you want from your captain. Look, it seems like I don't know. I guess is Desi having the desired effect there of putting a bit of steel in them and
the Manly DNA's back under Des.
Is that it?
Yeah, I don't know.
Curtis Sirenen played well too.
Yeah, he did. They're sort of winning it with their defence at the moment. Yeah. Even, you know, last week when they were up against South and Turbo went off, they sort of managed to win it with their defence, even though they weren't playing that well otherwise.
Yeah.
Dally M votes courtesy of Steve Blocker Roach. Jake Trbojevic actually got the 3. He was fantastic as well. I thought Daly might have got the 3, but he got the 2. And Adam Fanua Black got the 1, so 3 there. They're best, certainly, in that one.
Mm, Dally M point with a sin bin.
Well, it's going to he loses a few on the leaderboard. He started the season on -2 Dally M points for the suspensions. He's getting another -2 or so.
What do you think of their rotation with Corrissau and Fainu?
It's interesting, isn't it?
How long do you reckon that's going to last?
Corrissau was actually decent in that game, but I think Manasseh Fainu's been outplaying him the last few weeks. Probably
they're both good players.
Mm.
Do you continue carrying two throughout the whole season?
I mean, they're both guys who could play 60, if not 80 minutes, and they're both playing 40. But if you've got a good dynamic dummy half playing 40 minutes each half and you're not losing anything from your structure, I guess if it's not broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, I guess so.
Good philosophy.
Yeah.
It's worked before. Before that was probably almost my game of the round, the Rabbitohs against the Warriors up at the Sunny Coast. It was a Cook and Walker show, but the Warriors sort of ran them right to the end of the game.
Yeah, I think this game highlighted big differences between those teams, and that the Warriors, they know what to do when things are going their way and they're winning, and the Rabbitohs know what to do when things aren't going their way and how to turn a game around in their favour. And once the Rabbitohs got hold of it towards that last 20 minutes, the Warriors just threw it in. They didn't know how to handle it.
Yeah, I do think the Warriors deserve a big hats off.
Well, they lost Blake Green in the warm-up, obviously.
In the warm-up, special wrap's got to go to Chanel Harris-DeVita.
Yep.
I mean, he was probably looking at going into that game. It's only his second NRL game, yeah?
Yeah, correct.
He was probably looking at going into that game as just playing a secondary role to Blake Green, and then all of a sudden he's the main guy. And I thought he really did stand up. Did make a few errors sort of towards the back end of the game.
Yep.
But that's just an experience. But outside of that, he was growing in confidence throughout the game, and I thought the team really really put in a lot more of an effort this week. You could see it on the field; they were physical. Souths weren't at their best, but Cody Walker, wow, Damien Cook, wow, they just
electric,
they just killed it, yeah.
It's been a bit of discussion about this, but I think it was 24-0 at the end of the game. Adam Reynolds off to the right, screaming for the ball so we can nail the one-pointer, and Cody Walker overcalls him to the left and scores the match-winning try. It's a gutsy play, but it paid off.
Yeah, I was down at South training a month or two ago talking to Wayne Bennett, and he was saying that he's seen Cody Walker do things that he hasn't seen any other football player do. That's the kind of player that he is, and look, he just... I don't even think he knows what he's going to do himself, but it just always seems to turn golden.
So that Cody Walker overcall for the match-winning try, are you guys both convinced that it was definitely on the line? Like, I think if it had gone up as no try, it would have come back as no try.
I don't know. I thought when Fusatua's knee came down or his body came down on the ball, it sort of squished it into the line and Cody's hand was still on it without losing it. I was pretty happy with the
I mean, I don't think it was particularly controversial, but I think had it gone up, with a no try, it would have been hard to come back as a try.
Yeah, I thought it was never in doubt.
Says the ex-Bunnies player.
It's Cody Walker, you almost forget now that he's been around for three or 4 years.
How old is he? Didn't he debut at 26 or 26. Something outrageous like that?
He spent about 5 years being the best player in, Queensland Cup, and, he meant to debut for Melbourne and got ruled out during the week with a hammy strain. There was one of the halves was out and he got put in, and then he was out and he missed his debut and ended up coming up to Souths for a sort of a Hail Mary chance, mid to late career for a bloke who hasn't debuted yet, and he's just gone from absolute strength to strength since then. It's a fair story.
Yeah.
Do we want to talk anything else about the Warriors? Now, we were talking a little bit off air about the, or even on the podcast last RTS. Week about Rogers.
Yeah, he is phenomenal. Just that, the way that guy beats people every time. The first tackle, he beats them every time, has people literally clutching at air. His change of direction, turn of speed is phenomenal. I love watching him play.
I don't know, you just had that little skip where he floats through the air and then he hits the ground and he's just gone sideways or forwards or whatever. He just gets around.
Yeah, it's like his body moves in three separate directions. Like, the head goes one, shoulders another way, hips. Yeah, it's great what he does.
There's a definite head fake where he puts people off and then he just, he goes. It's so good. Dally M votes for this one, courtesy of Brett Camorley. The three votes went to the guy who scored four tries, Cody Walker. No surprises there. Two actually went to Roger.
Yeah, I agree with that one.
Fantastic. Yeah. And the one went to Damien Cook, who I don't know if you'll play that well and only get one Dally M point too often, but it was a stiff field. The game before that, we had the, the Cowboys and the Storm on Friday night. Really thought the Cowboys were going to get away with this one, but Storm, bit the same as last week, wasn't going for them. They found a way.
Yeah, well, Melbourne don't let you get away with much with anything, really, do they?
Mm.
Yep, always finding a way. Jerome Hughes was good again.
Very good.
He's, he's got a real big advantage there because Billy Slater has just set the benchmark. You just pretty much just got to watch Billy Slater's games and just do exactly what he did. And that's pretty much, when I'm watching Jerome Hughes, I feel like that's what's happened. I know that Billy still has a hand in the coaching down there. And, just watching this young guy go, he's got a good base to go from and he's got the best help around him, and it's certainly paying off. His energy levels and enthusiasm and his positioning on the field is just getting better every week.
Supposed to start the season in reserve grade until he's got Drinkwater.
Exactly. So imagine the arsenal that they've got in their back pocket as well.
It's phenomenal. Kenny, if you're a Cowboys fan, what do you make of this one?
I think there was huge signs of improvement. Really disappointing not to get the win. I thought it was Michael Morgan's strongest game. Like he kicked a 40-20 at one stage. I'm pretty sure. I thought he controlled the game quite well, much better than he has previously. Anyway. It's just a shame that they're like a boa constrictor. They're just sort of eventually going to suck the last breath out of you. And it's always a matter of, can you hold on until the siren goes, or is the siren going to go first? And you just sort of knew what was going to happen eventually.
Yeah. Pretty shocking moment in this one, obviously, with Nene McDonald suffering a serious ankle injury. Sounds like a couple of fractures and a dislocation, so probably a 4 to 6 month layoff for him. Obviously, the response has been about the fact that the play was allowed to continue. Referees under a directive to sort of, not stop the play for everything, and including injuries, unless it's serious. Now, it's easy in hindsight that this should have been stopped, but the pilot and the refs, I don't know, are they meant to diagnose something like that on the fly?
No, I think it's too hard. I guess as the referee, you're just trying to stay in the moment. You don't really have eyes in the back of your head unless there's touchies calling it out to you or something like that.
I think it was fair enough. No one, even watching it live on TV, no one had any idea what had actually happened until you saw the slow-mo replay. And they were so far out of the play. It's not like they were, no one was in danger, in further danger from, play getting anywhere or anything. I thought they were well within their.
Because the reason you stop the play, isn't it, is if someone's down and injured and in the way and you're in danger of getting tackled on them or running over the top of them or interfering with the play, but that wasn't wasn't really the case.
I think the contention is because the two players were down, therefore the Cowboys only had 10 men in the defensive line, and that's not fair. But like, there's a lot of stuff that's not fair.
Yeah,
you just got to cop it sometimes.
Yeah, ideally it would have been stopped because it was a serious injury. But even the two TV channels, I think Channel 9 with Phil Gould were just following the play and not talking about the injury, whereas Vossi on Fox was sort of like, hang on, what's the go? They should be stopping, so there's an injury. So even the, you know, depending on which channel you were watching, you weren't really sure how serious it was. It's bad for the Cowboys, not just because they've lost a player to injury, but their back five's really struggled. For Spark and Nene McDonald, sort of that big body, was really good at the Dragons last year.
Bringing it back for them as well. Nice and high.
Know, already playing, you know, Ben Hampton on a wing, who's a hooker / centre / fullback. It's, you know, they're still missing Kyle Felt as well. So it's more another hit for the Cowboys backline.
When is Kyle Felt back?
He's been pretty close, I think, for a couple of weeks. So hopefully for the Cowboys' sake, he's back next week or the week after.
What about the alleged but not reported eye gouge?
Well, it's just a bad look. Clearly, I don't know if he eye gouged him. This is Josh Maguire on Cameron Munster, who withdrew the complaint.
I think he did hook his fingers back up there. And
yeah.
It looked like...
He was trying to do something. It was a bad look, I thought, but...
I thought it was a bad look.
I think he... Has
Cam Munster just pulled the ultimate con here in that, like, because he mentioned it on the field but then didn't make an official complaint, but now because he mentioned it, it's all going to, the match review committee is eventually going to go back and look at that footage, and he's Josh Maguire's going to get done anyway.
Yeah.
He's like a, you know, he's a dobber without being a dobber.
Well, I think that is true, but in the spur of the moment, you're always going to blow up about something like that.
Oh, fair enough. Like, he should have made an official complaint. That sort of behaviour is not on.
He would have been entitled to stand up and job him one, but actually probably he's not the guy that you want to do that to.
It did get noticed because you got a grade one contrary, but it's only a fine, which, you know, isn't, you know, it's no penalty at all for the Cowboys in terms of suspensions or anything. Dally M's in this one. Andrew Johns was the judge. 3 points went to Cameron Smith, who was... pretty instrumental once Melbourne started to, you know, tease their way back into the game, as he has been for, you know, 400 odd NRL games now.
Greatest point scorer in history now too.
Well, yeah, probably be remiss not to mention that as well. It's quite a nice moment with his two kids on the field as well. So, you know, you saw them huddled behind him, sort of nervously looking on as he was lying.
That was
up
a great back. Shot. That one,
it's fantastic was a really good shot. A pretty funny video from Hazem El-Masri as well. If you haven't seen it on the Canterbury social accounts, throwing his TV out when that happened before.
I love it.
A more genuine congratulations to Cameron Smith. Other Daily M's, 2 points to Cameron Munster and 1 point to Big Nelson, Asifa Solomona, which is probably fair enough. The game before that was one of the other really entertaining games of the round, which threatened on paper not to be, but turned out to be really enjoyable. The Titans up against the Panthers. More bad news for Penrith, unfortunately, but a well-earned win at long last for the Gold Coast.
Wasn't it good to see the Gold Coast team happy, like, at the end? Yeah. They were so happy.
It
like,
looked
Garth
like they
Brennan,
won the grand final.
Yeah, like, it was just great to see them. A bit of joy. Like, the Titans, I don't think they're as bad as their record says. They've played definitely played better. They had, you know, they've had some games that probably didn't go their way. But they got a team to perform much better than their position on the table indicates. And I think this game is a stepping stone. Like, I had them in my eight. I had them sneaking in at about number eight for this year. Now the run's going to start now. I can feel it. Yeah.
I didn't quite have them in the eight, but I had them as one of the couple of dark horses to potentially threaten to make the eight. And I just think their forward pack's so good, they should be.
Well, that's, yeah, that was my logic. That's an all representative forward pack, basically.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, Penrith, it's another week of soul searching.
Well, I think silver lining for me was I felt like the Panthers' attack was just a little bit better this week.
Yeah.
Looked a bit more threatening. They looked strong on the edges. They had some guys hitting some holes hard. They were shifting it laterally. So they actually looked a lot more dynamic, but I just don't know what happened with their defense. There's some really poor reads there, just really basic stuff, guys coming in or mismatches or crossing over each other in defense. I don't know what that was about, but look, if there's a silver lining to take out of for the Panthers, their attack is sort of starting to move in the right direction, I think.
Yeah, I think kick out back helps that.
Makes a massive difference, doesn't it?
Scored a try that not too many other people would have scored.
Yeah. He's always sucking in two or three defenders, which you get the likes of Maloney or the other guys around him, they can really take advantage of that because it means there's a mismatch somewhere else.
Mm. Yeah, they are struggling a bit, but hopefully for their sake, the rejuvenated attack carries forward. Dally M votes in this one came by Justin Hodges. 3 points went to Jared Wallace, who's been a bit maligned to start this year. We had a huge game, plenty of carries, quite a few busts. I think he scored a try as well, didn't he, in that one? 2 points went to Ryan James, who was probably my man of the match. I thought he was phenomenal in the middle, played close to 70 minutes and huge numbers, which we're accustomed to seeing from him when he plays big minutes in the middle. And the last one went to Michael Gordon, who was just vintage flash. So many great moments. The 250 game, obviously.
Scored a try.
Local lad as well. He's from up, is it Coffs or up northern New South Wales somewhere before he found his way down to Penrith. So he's pretty local to the Gold Coast. And if anyone didn't see it, necking the schooner on the boundary line at full time.
I missed that one. I love that.
So it's a classic flash.
I also like the look of Brian Kelly. He's electric with his feet, strong. I think I'm really looking forward to seeing more of him play.
Yeah, well, he's a Gold Coast local as well. He got his debut at Manly before finding his way up there back to where he's from. But really good to see him doing well in the centres. Good little player.
So Origin Bolter, is that what you're saying?
I don't know, maybe.
One thing before we move on, one thing I wanted to highlight from this game, and I don't think it's ever really spoken about, but I'm going to say good bunker work on the penalty try. I just thought it was really well.
Yeah.
The process of the decision was really clear, and it was just you were left not wondering how they got there. Like every decision was stepped out, and I think that's probably been. I noticed across this round there was a couple of tries, like the Aiden Guerra try, that looked like it should have been a double movement but wasn't. I thought was bunkered really well. Is that like a bunkered really well? The decision, the process was just really clear. We're moving on from here because of this reason. Like just stepping through the logic, I really liked it. I thought it was great.
Completely agree with you on that one.
I agree. It is a bit of a tangent, but just on the penalty tries, I'm really loving the new sort of criteria for a penalty try. It used to be like if you have to be 100% sure a try was being scored, which basically means unless you were fouled play by being knocked out on the way to scoring it with a ball in both hands, like we saw in the 97 grand final, like you just never saw them given. Whereas now it's sort of an improbability. You know, we believe he would have scored. And the argument from James Maloney in that Bryce Cartwright try was that he still got to the ball and he still fumbled it. So how do you know that he would have scored? And it's like, well, we don't know. We don't have to know. The point was he was fouled. And he had a clear run
and
on the ball.
And he was probably going to do it.
And we think he was probably going to score, therefore it's a penalty try.
I also like the way how this year they just step you through it really, really quickly. Mm. Bang, decisions made, move on.
Yeah.
I really like that. And it's
the
more they rewind and go backwards and forwards and dilly-dally around, the more people start having different opinions. And I think that was what was leading to so much conjecture before, whereas now they just get it done and we move on and start talking about something else. Mm.
Good tactical play from Bryce Cartwright to get the conversion from in front as well.
He knew what he was doing the whole time.
Devious. The round kicked off with the Broncos up against the triumphant West Tigers. Kenny, you would have enjoyed Michael Cheekham's hot-stepping try at the end of this one.
Yeah, well, I told you that watching the Tigers game the week before was one of the most stressful experiences of my life. This one was no different. It was so tight. It was close the whole time. I thought we were really lucky. Played well defensively, but like the Broncos bombed at least two tries. Jack Bird dropped one basically over the line. There was another one again. So whilst it's great that they had a lucky win, the focus should not be taken away from the fact that I think it was kind of lucky. The Cheekham try at the end was obviously magnificent, but again, that was a freakish try.
Yeah, I thought the Broncos, they worked harder this week.
Well, they were a lot better than last week.
Yeah, they did work a lot harder. Luke Brooks was outstanding.
Yep.
20 runs, 151 metres. That's some good stuff there. Shining light for me was Payne Haas.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see him and Tevita Pengai Jr. in the same team at the same time. That's going to be scary. But just young kid like that, I think he's only 19 years old. He played about 68 minutes or something like that. 45 tackles, 168 metres. But what I saw from him, he was running harder at the end of the game and faster than he was at the start of the game after doing all that work as well. So certainly some bright signs there. He seems like a bigger version of Jason Taumalolo.
Wow.
He's got some speed off the mark. Yeah, I think... yeah, I can't wait to see more of him play as well.
Yeah, we saw him in very limited minutes last year before he was ruled out through injury. And, you know, we kind of knew coming into this year that he was really highly rated. We knew he was really big and he was going to sort of cause some damage in the middle. But I was expecting that to be in 30 to 35 minutes off the bench. I didn't think he was going to be swept into the starting side at lock and play almost 70 minutes and rack up 45 tackles and still be powering through the middle after making 45.
I think they say tackles. He's one of the fittest forwards up there as well. So
it's incredible.
Imagine a bloke like him playing 80 minutes.
Mm. Imagine when he's 22, 23. He's only 19.
Can we see him at the Bunnies? If Gio retires tomorrow.
Yeah.
Bennett's got plenty of room in the cap then.
Better chance of Pango, I think, than Payne Haas, but that wouldn't be
Right. He's just signed for 4 years, hasn't he?
Haas, I think he's on the books for a while.
Yeah.
Pango's just on the one, so he might be him. I might see him sooner rather than later.
Still a few issues for the Broncos being able to sort of...
Yeah, well, you're talking about the halves off air.
Yeah, just some moments there of confusion. And when there's confusion on the field, that generally always falls back to the halves.
Yeah.
They've got to do something to rectify that in some way, shape or form. Really, for me, I think at the back end of the sets, someone really needs to stick their hand up or even be allocated a role that they're going to make sure that the set finishes off in the right way. And it's not just a case of waiting until the fifth tackle and the ball gets to you and you just do your best, which at times that's what it looks like for them. It's more a case of tackle three. You start teeing it up with the guy that's hitting it up tackle four that you want to get to a certain position and you need a quick play of the ball. It's not a matter of trying to pull through the tackle and getting a couple of extra meters if it's going to be a really slow play of the ball. It's take the tackle, get up, play the ball so we can all get a good kick chase and make another 30 or 40 metres down the field, whereas it doesn't seem like they have that mentality at the back end of their sets at this stage.
Would you say the best solution is just get rid of one of them or make them work better together? Do you think, like, because this we've seen this combo for a good couple of seasons, ever since Hunt left, basically, and I think we said it last week, in fact, nothing's really changed. They've always kind of had problems.
I think there's moments through the game or parts of the game where one of them is just going to have to be allocated a role. Like, okay, it's your role to make sure that we get our kick on four or five, and if it doesn't work, it's on you. And then the other guy is just the backup kicker, as opposed to both of them being an option and neither of them knows which one's going to get it, and the hooker doesn't know which one's going to get it, and the people outside them don't know which way they're going to kick it, and then it's just a schmozzle.
If you were going to cut one, who would it be?
I don't know. I feel like Nikorima has had a bit more potency up until now. But I don't know. Pay me enough to be a coach.
They do have options. They've got Sean O'Sullivan up there as a seven that came through the Roosters system, and a young guy named Thomas Dearden, who's only 18 but very highly rated, who could be the seven in years to come. A few headaches there for Anthony Seibold at the moment. Dalian Boats, Gary Belcher was on for this one. Luke Brooks got the three. It probably wouldn't surprise any of us. Yep. Michael Cheekham probably had to get the two. He had a good game even before that try. He's mostly a back rower these days. Came on at centre when Robert Jennings went off and played 60 minutes.
He had the offload for the Tigers opening try, didn't he?
Yeah, try assist. So he had a solid 60 minutes at centre. And Payne Haas got the one, which I probably can't argue with. Huge numbers there for the Broncos in the middle. Yeah. Gentlemen, any final thoughts before I sign this one off?
No, just good bunkering. Keep it up.
Good bunkering. Keep up the good bunkering. that brings us into another podcast. Obviously, plenty of good stuff to come on NRL.com this week. We've got Inside the NRL with Michael Chamis, Jamie Soward, Katie Brown on Monday, NRL Teams. Another live show with Tubes and Noddy and Zach Bailey on the Tuesday. More podcasts. We've got Steve Renoff on Wednesday, Jamie Soward on Friday. So plenty of good stuff to come. Thanks again for joining us on the Sunday session. Thanks, boys.
Thanks, boys.
See ya.